even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Buonasera, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my fitness pal, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
You really made that sound like you didn't just spend the last 3 minutes workshopping that intro.
I made it sound like it just rolled off the tongue.
Straight off the top of your head, mate.
Such a pro. How are we doing, boys?
Not bad.
I think not bad is the correct answer after a 0-0 draw against Watford. Bardi, what did you make of the overall performance? Are you happy with the result?
No, of course, I'm not happy with the result, but there's definitely positives to be taken from the result.
Okay, such as? Mm.
Such as it was a clean sheet. It was our first one in over a year away from home. So
is that right? A year?
Yeah, since Cardiff, the 1-0 against Cardiff back early in January. Yeah, so I think it's just over a year, yeah.
Okay,
so
interesting.
That's a positive to take. Some of our play was quite interesting. You could see Mourinho was going back to that kind of formation that we saw against West Ham away at the start of his tenure. So there was bits there to be positive about. Obviously, there's things to be negative about and a bit down around. But you could see something's happening.
Something's happening. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And Nathan, are you surprised about the clean sheet? Certainly in response to the fact that there were very few defensive-minded players in the Spurs lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we didn't give up any chances. Like, it's not our... and I know how, berating nerdy is to say, but like it's not like our best performance from like a expected goals against perspective in that last year. You know, you take the clean sheet, obviously, but yeah, Watford were definitely in that game from an attack perspective, and certainly as the game went on.
And we owe Paolo Gazzaniga a big thank you for saving a penalty. Did a good job there. We've all been critical of him at various points across this season, but if you save a penalty, there's not an awful lot more a goalkeeper can do to deserve a clean sheet. So that was really nice for him. There were some sort of semi surprises, I suppose, in the team selection. News broke about an hour and a half before the teams were announced that Tanganga might play left back. Were you surprised by that selection, Bardi?
Yes and no. No, yes is in the fact that he played on the left-hand side. I thought we might see Tanganga play in that kind of right-back role, and then perhaps we would use Sessegnon in a kind of an attacking full-back role. But playing as that almost like that third centre-back, he had a tough old time. I think he was stretched more by Saar than he was by Mane last week. But no, he kind of deserved it from his two performances midweek in the Cup and against Liverpool. He deserved to be given another chance. And I thought he was booked early. A lot of people were a little bit nervous. But I think he seems to be quite a level-headed young chap. And I thought he had a good game in difficult circumstances.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment. He had a really tough time against Saar at points in the first half and start of the second. But he stuck at it and he ended up towards the end of the game, he was winning a lot of battles with him. So he did well. He kind of he could have easily been taken off once he'd been yellow carded, but he showed that he had the attitude to keep his head, and Mourinho trusted him and kept him on the pitch.
And Saar blew up. You know, Saar tried his living daylights against him. He tried and tried, and in the end, it was Saar that kind of fell to pieces and had nothing left in the tank. And Tanganga was still strong.
Sure, as far as I'm aware, Tanganga's never played left back before. I mean, certainly not for the under-18s or under-23s that I can remember. He's barely played right back, to be honest. It would literally be a handful of games that he's played right back. So to have two of your three sort of games this season in the Premier League out of position as such, quite impressive. Nathan, what did you make of his performance?
It was a tricky one for him with Saar, wasn't it? I was really, really impressed with him against Middlesbrough. And then obviously he had a harder time against Watford, a high level of opposition. I do think that we'll see him in that sort of left-back, left-centre-back hybrid role quite a bit going forward. I think that makes a lot of sense. If we rewind the conversation, there was a lot of talk, like Bardi just alluded to, with the idea of playing Sessegnon as the attacking left-back and Juan Foyth as the defensive right-back, and then Tanganga sort of moved into that Foyth role. But the problem with that, of course, is that doesn't really suit our attacking players. So I think that against Middlesbrough, we got away with it fine because we sort of blew them away with talent, but there wasn't a lot of occupation in the sort of high, wide right area. But it makes perfect sense playing him on the left because it's a role where you're inside a lot of the time anyway. So having your inside foot over there makes sense as a more defensive player. So I think we'll probably see a lot of this going forwards. I've been really impressed with Tanganga generally. I wasn't that high on him as a youth player. Obviously, I don't watch anywhere near as much youth football as you do, Windy, but he wasn't on my sort of to watch list. I had him behind Aoma, and then Aoma was injured in pre-season, is that right? And Tanganga sort of stepped up and took his place in pre-season and did well there, and everything's really coming through for him. I didn't have huge hopes for Tanganga, and I don't want to put too much pressure on him right now and say, oh, he's been incredible, but I've definitely been impressed with him. He's performed better than I would have expected so far.
Yeah, and you certainly can't ask for any more from a young player being brought into the first team. Certainly, he was sort of thrown in at the deep end, I suppose, against Liverpool. And that was a technique that worked for Pochettino in his early days, bringing a young player in kind of unexpectedly in a big match. And that shows a lot of faith in the player. And I like that. I like what Mourinho's done there. I think he will take him out of a team, possibly not next game, but with him in the next few, I suspect, to give him a little break. And that would be a sensible management of him. But to show his sort of faith and play him three games in a row, I really like that. And he's gone from strength to strength in terms of his experience of playing in the first team.
Mourinho's done this thing before where he plays a youth centre-back in a sort of a bonus defensive role for a big game. There was the game where he's in charge of Chelsea and Gerrard slipped. And I can't remember the name of the young man he had playing centre-back at that game. But we've seen that a couple of times from before, but then that player sort of disappears again completely from public view. So it's really good to see him sort of, Tanganga sort of capitalise that on and go forward. I'm pretty excited about Tanganga. I am excited about Tanganga, but I think that Foyth is a really, really special player. And, it's a shame that he's sort of been usurped, as it were.
Yeah, and there's lots of rumours about Foyth being sold potentially, which is a very, very much a pity as far as I'm concerned. I think a fair few fans will be pleased to see the back of him because they see him as a liability, but I think there's a huge upside there. The other surprise in the starting lineup, really, especially from a defensive perspective, was that Davinson Sanchez was back on the bench. Bardi, that would have been a surprise to you, I guess.
After seeing the game, I can kind of understand it because where Davinson has an issue, especially he had a big one midweek, is up against a quite strong striker. So I think perhaps Mourinho didn't want to put him in a one-on-one situation in the air with Deeney, and perhaps was had more faith in Vertonghen, especially as they didn't really have a striker that could run in behind. So I think he opted for Vertonghen for the aerial duels and just the sheer body strength. Sanchez does have an issue up when he's up against a big number nine.
Yeah, we've definitely seen that from Sanchez before, where he's been a little bit bullied off the ball. and not quite knowing how to use his body to bully a player back, and he ends up committing cheap fouls in the midfield area, which is quite unhelpful. But a pity, I suppose, that Sanchez was dropped out of the team, but hopefully it's for the reasons you've said, Bardi, rather than anything more long-term. I thought we started the game quite well. We seemed to take an early foothold, and then Watford came back into it. And there were periods of the first half, certainly, where we were very, very passive. In fact, both teams were quite passive. It was not the game I expected. I was thinking Watford would try and assert their authority in midfield quite early, particularly given that we only had Winks in there as a positional player in Mourinho's own terms. But that didn't really happen until the second half, where they started winning that midfield battle. Nathan, what did you think of the sort of the clash of styles there?
Yeah, I wasn't totally shocked that Watford didn't sort of try and press the issue until the second half and sort of be physical in that way. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then once you factor that in, I do think you definitely get the game you expected in that. We had a lot of technical players and we played some nice attacking football, but we weren't able to properly assert ourselves by sort of continuing our pressure and dominating in that way. And then, of course, in the second half, when Watford start to be more physical and push us back, we crumbled is too harsh a word. What's a softer term? But we sort of came under their pressure and sort of began to fell apart a little bit.
And there were very few clear-cut chances in this game. It always felt, certainly the second half, like there would just be one key chance that would settle it. Watford had their penalty, missed it. We had the Lamella chance. We're, 2 millimetres away from winning. It was very tight. There wasn't a lot in there for either side. So I guess 0-0 was probably a fairish result in the end. But one of the big frustrations for me was that I thought Lucas was particularly toothless up front, and I don't think he's suited to playing that role. Bardi, is there anything we could do differently at the moment?
I don't know. It's really difficult because both Lucas and Son are appalling with their back to goal at the moment. Son, you can't play the ball into Son when he's facing his own goal. He just doesn't hold it and he's unable to do much with it. And I think Lucas is actually a little bit better than Son in that respect. At least he can kind of do a quick turn. Yeah. And then he's a totally different player once he's facing the right direction. I think that's a big problem for us at the moment, and especially against teams like Watford that don't play very high and it's very difficult to hit him on the counter. I think we're going to need to think about this quite well. We definitely need to think about it because we're not going to be able to break teams down with Son and Lucas as a point man.
And for me, everything you've just described there led to it being quite a difficult game for our attacking midfielders. So Dele, I thought, did a good job in midfield of taking the ball on the half turn and then driving us forward. But then he had very little to pass forward to. There was limited activity in the final third. And the same with Lo Celso, really. He was quite sort of sharp and incisive. But once he kind of made those quick passes, there wasn't much movement, and Watford had lots of bodies behind the ball, and it was turning out to be a really frustrating game for those creative players. Bardi, you didn't like Dele's performance in this match.
I just thought he was a little bit wasteful. I thought the opportunities where we got Watford turned and we were going at them were quite few. So he managed to put Lucas through once, but I think there was a few other occasions where his passing was just a little bit sloppy. And in games like this where it is so tight and we don't have a point man, I think you've got to be a little bit more precise, and you play those percentages a bit better. And I thought he wasn't good at that, and I think he knew it as well. His reaction when he came off, he was very disappointed, and it was a poor game from him. But I know what you mean. In our own half, when he was collecting the second ball and turning, that was fine. But it just in the final third, he wasn't up to his usual standard.
Mm. I kind of want to see Dele playing higher if he's playing personally. And when Mourinho first came in and Dele was reinstalled as the second striker, he looked kind of back to his best. And then game by game, he's dropped deeper and deeper as the midfield injuries have set in. Hopefully, with the return of Ndombele, that means Dele can play a little higher. Although, frankly, he looks like he needs a break at the moment. He looks like he needs a couple of games off to recover his spark. But I hope that he gets a little rest and then comes back and plays higher up the pitch where he's much more effective. And then perhaps we won't have to play Lucas because Dele could do a job potentially up front by himself. Jedson came on, and I thought he looked quite impressed. Bardi, did you catch Jedson's cameo?
Yeah, he had a touch of the Paulinhos about him.
harsh
And no, no, as in like he loves breaking the lines. He properly likes charging through. So and I like that. Sometimes we need a player who's just willing to gallop into space and move on to the ball. And it wasn't the worst debut in the world. I don't know. This is a bit off topic, but I have a question for both of you. I didn't mind the Lo Celso Winks partnership, and I guess in that kind of game it suits it. But if Ndombele was fit, who doesn't play in that match? Is it Lucas or is it Lamella or is it Lo Celso or Winks? I'm not sure where does he fit in that. For me, I'd probably take Lamella, put Ndombele in there, maybe drop him a little bit deeper and Lo Celso further forward. But you two, what do you think?
I think what you've just described is what Mourinho would do. Yeah. I would personally leave Lucas on the bench for the time being and go with either Dele or Lamella or both of them at the sharp end and parachute Ndombele into our midfield because I think he'd make a really big difference at the moment. I really am looking forward to Ndombele being fit and Lo Celso also playing in the same team as him because I think that will be a real difference maker to us. I thought Winks actually had quite a tidy game. It's fairly unspectacular, although he played that one genuinely spectacular pass through to Son, who in taking it first time and smashing it over the bar made it look a lot more difficult a chance than it needed to be. If he'd taken a touch, he probably could have had a shot there and it would have been a really good scoring chance, but I could see why he took it first time, but he did make it difficult for himself. Sorry, Nathan, I'll let you answer Bardi's question.
No, I completely agree. Bardi has said what Mourinho would do. I would take Lucas off. I'll just add that, you know, none of these rotations really sort of solve the midfield problem as it is with the squad.
Yeah, really good point. I mean, we still undoubtedly need a solid defensive midfielder. I think I was really surprised that Eric Dier didn't start this game, personally. I thought he would, but I can also absolutely understand why he didn't, because he does really look like he's, you know, running through treacle at the moment. His sharpness just hasn't returned as quickly as we hoped it might. His passing is inconsistent. There are some good things. He fills spaces better than our other midfielders.
He is our only defensive midfielder, yeah.
and exactly. No, just through the fact that he's there and his natural instincts lead to him being in front of a defence, it really helps. I think it helps. A lot of people disagree. I would stick with him until we've signed someone else to play that role. But I can also understand Mourinho's reticence based upon his previous few performances. We had a question from Unfit for Spurpose. Who says, when Eriksen leaves, do you think we will act to get a replacement, or are we likely to go ahead with a different style that doesn't need to accommodate an Eriksen-type player? For example, Liverpool and Coutinho. What do we think, Bardi? If Eriksen does leave this window as expected, do you think Mourinho signs someone, or do you think he just goes with Lo Celso as the Eriksen replacement?
Yeah, I think he goes with Lo Celso. I think if that Eriksen money, the wages and the cash comes in, I think we'll probably see that go on a striker. I think Mourinho's had enough with our strike force as it is at the moment, and especially with Son being so out of form. I think signing a nine, at least a person capable of scoring a scruffy goal is really important, because there was a few kind of scrambles and a few cutbacks in that game that had Kane been on the pitch, he would have got a hat-trick.
Sure. How about you, Nathan? What do you think? Is it worth trying to replace Eriksen, or is he irreplaceable?
he's certainly very, very difficult to replace, despite the sort of terms that he's leaving on. I thought he was fine against Middlesbrough. I think Lo Celso is our intended replacement for Eriksen, and I think that he was necessary and will continue to be necessary. We need to activate his sort of permanent clause if we haven't done already. Liverpool are really the only team in the world who can play without a playmaker, and you need to play their exact kind of football if you want to avoid having a playmaker, and you need, you know, one of only a couple of coaches in the world who can coach that kind of football to an extremely high level to play without a playmaker. So you've got to have one, basically.
They are hugely spoiled as well, because their sort of playmaking duties are shared between a number of highly technical players, such as a right back. I mean, that is exceptionally unusual for a right back to have playmaking abilities, but Alexander-Arnold has that. Also, Wijnaldum, I think, has been terrific this year. And whilst he's not kind of a Eriksen-style tempo setter or prober, he's got some of that ability, and he does, you know, pop up around the edge of the box and play incisive passes. Cater as well, who's not quite established himself, but is a terrific player in his own right. They've got that skill set buried within other players, so they kind of share the load, whereas with Spurs, you know, perhaps in time we'll have it with Lo Celso and Ndombele and maybe even Winks. But at the moment, we're so heavily reliant on Eriksen. And when he doesn't play, or when he doesn't play well, which has been the case for some time now, we don't look fluent. And it's going to take some getting used to, for sure.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea's sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.
You touched on the Borough game already, Nathan, but there was some good football there, wasn't there?
Yeah, I really genuinely enjoyed that game, which is not something I can say about Tottenham a huge amount in the last, you know, year nearly. Again, really, really impressed with Tanganga, really impressed with Lo Celso. Again, I thought Lo Celso was good against Watford. It was nice to see Eriksen not be terrible, so that he's not, if he does leave within the next couple of days, he's not leaving on a really bad performance. And that kind of sour note. A continuation of that sort of the ideas that what Mourinho said the other day about sort of West Ham being the game where his ideas were most realised because he had the defensive fullback. But we also saw Tanganga sort of mix that up. So we did see him tuck in and play third centre-back, but also against Borough and also again a little bit against Watford. We saw him be adventurous as well when the time called for that. So I think it's a pretty difficult and special role that Mourinho wants there, in that, you know, you've got to be able to be a centre back and a winger, which I guess is sort of what a fullback is, but it's taking that to a pretty extreme place.
Yeah, that's fair. And on the other side, we had a really interesting battle between Sessegnon and Spence. Spence for Borough is very, very impressive for a 19-year-old, and our own 19-year-old Sessegnon, I thought, had a really good game. He wasn't taking players on with the ball, but his movement off it was, to me, really exciting. He was kind of playing a ball inside and then just galloping past his man, waiting to receive it. He didn't always get it back, but I was really encouraged by the performance of both of our fullbacks in that game. That was one of the better Spurs fullback performances I've seen for a while, with both playing well. There were some issues in the game, sure. I thought Sanchez had a pretty ropey one, and perhaps that led to him being dropped for Watford. But on the whole, there was some positive play there. Bar, did you catch the Borough game?
Yeah, I was at the match. It was a weird atmosphere. It was went on general sale, so it was lots of families and kids and stuff. The most important thing for me, who was at the game, I just didn't want extra time. I was like, and then when Munoz was scored, the last thing I needed was extra time on a personal level. But it was, the first half was nice, and always without killing the game off completely, we always left the door open for Gazzaniga not to get down at his get down quick enough. So, but we got through, and that's the most important thing. And I'm looking forward to Southampton away now.
which is a tricky game in itself. They've already beaten us this season, and they're a bit up and down, but generally since they started this run, since the 9-0 defeat to Leicester, in fact, they've looked a tidy outfit, so that won't be an easy match at all. We should talk about transfers, really. We're sort of two-thirds of the way through the transfer window. Nathan, you've written here on the running order, Mendes runs our club now.
Yeah, pretty much, which is hard to spin in a positive way. It's like, he's a really sort of crafty, but with that sort of dodgy character and the number of clubs he has significant operation in. And I get it in that we're in this flux situation at the moment and we want temporary solutions. And the club seem especially focused on the recent injuries we had during the window, which are to Kane and Sissoko, and say, okay, let's get temporary replacements in for them and then reassess things later down the line. And therefore, we're not going to go into our budget. But then, like, that's not a completely free hit to like take on the wages and a place in the squad for that period of time. And then I imagine there's going to be like an appearance-based kind of activations, and then you have to be careful of that. And I don't know, just getting into bed with Mendes makes me feel very uncomfortable.
And was it the links to his striker? Is it Zé Luís?
I think it's just Zé. It might be Jair or something weird, but yeah.
The Brazilian striker, is that right?
I thought he was Portuguese.
I could be wrong. But he's another Mendes client. Is that what made you think kind of there's something deeper here than, you know, the fact that... sorry, he's Cape Verdean, yeah. Just checked. The fact that we signed Jedson, who is owned by Mendes, I say owned by, he's his agent, and then we were linked with Zé Luís. Is that what made you think, God, we might have a problem here?
Yeah, I mean, so I find it surprising. Like, Levy is not the kind of chairman you would expect to just say, sure, yeah, what players have you got? Yeah, we'll bring them in, rather than sort of doing his own process. You know, we've seen that sort of Levy sort of... control down to a micro level sort of undermine relationships with managers over the years and make things difficult that way. So to see us sort of leaning heavily on Mendes, as we have seen other clubs do, is definitely surprising. Yeah, like I said, it does sort of make sense in I sympathize with the club's approach in that it's very temporarily focused. It's not like we're buying Mendes players straight out, but I don't know. Yeah, it's just weird.
I think it's one of those relationships where if we can maximise it for our own personal gain, then it won't bother me too much. I guess it's one of those things where you start wondering who's really going to profit from this. And
Mendes.
Yeah, exactly. Whilst it's Spurs, then fine. But you can't help but feel that there'll come a point where Spurs are profiting less than Mendes himself. And that is the issue. To me, Jedson, on first showing, I'm willing to give that deal the benefit of the doubt, because he did seem to add something that we don't have in other players. So I'm thinking perhaps Mourinho just knows the player really well, has already spotted that there's something missing from our team, someone who can break the lines, like Vardy mentioned, perhaps, who can just run and doesn't stop running until he gets into the box. Maybe that's something that's been missing since Dele stopped doing it, and maybe that's something he wants to add, particularly from the right-hand side. So I'm willing to give that one the benefit of the doubt. If we were to get two or three more loan signings where Mendes was involved, I might share your concerns, Nathan, but I guess we just see how these next sort of 10, 11 days go, see how it pans out. And Vardy, what are you making of the transfers so far? And do you have hopes for what we can manage to do in the last few days of the window?
Yeah, I know Nathan's fears about tying so closely in with Mendes, but if we can get a couple of players that and play it cleverly, then it's not a bad thing. Hopes wise, I don't know. I was cold on Piontek, but then he scored a couple of goals this week, and he's that kind of player that he would have scored two or three against Middlesbrough. And at a time, I joked that he wouldn't score against Watford, but then maybe he would have. I don't know. I just think we need somebody to occupy opposition defence at the moment. I think we're too easy if they sit back to be nullified, Lucas and Son. So I think we need a different option there. And if we can get him on a loan, then with an option to buy, then it's a good thing.
I don't know if that was deliberate, Bardi. That's a beautiful segue to our next question from Joe Gilby, who talks about Troy Parrott, and he says, with Mourinho saying Parrott's not ready for first team football, not including him in the squad against Middlesbrough, and not wanting him to go out on loan, plus in light of the news that he's apparently stalling on a new contract, is there a concern that Parrott becomes Tottenham's Jadon Sancho? And Bardi, when we originally spoke about this, you said absolutely not.
No, I don't know, man. I don't think so. Jadon Sancho is a bit of a player. But then I guess no one knew about him until he left.
Yes, they did.
Well, okay, they knew. Well, I didn't. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Parrott... Does Parrott deserve the hype? That's the question that I'm asking. Windy, does Parrott deserve the hype?
I think Parrott does deserve the hype, personally. I think okay. Parrott is... he's definitely the top five players I've ever seen for our academy.
Yeah, but I'm... You know, you hyped Edwards. He's now playing in...
No, Edwards is going to become our Sancho. He's tearing it up in Portugal at the moment.
And Windy hyped Carl Walker-Peters. No one wants
no
him.
No comment.
Not even Palace. Yeah. Windy hyped Velkovic. I don't know. Where is he? He's driving an Uber or something. I don't know.
playing centre-back for Werder Bremen.
Yeah, man.
There we go.
But yeah, I mean, Velkovic was a lovely player, and I think I honestly still believe it would have turned out differently if he got a chance, but such is life. I think the thing with Parrott is, so there's this talk about the contract. So there's two stories in the contract. The first is that when he turns 18, which is in a couple of weeks, he'll sign a long-term contract, and that is because I think before players are 18, they can't sign for more than 3 years. And frankly, I find this a bit odd, because why would we not just sign him at 17 for a three-year contract, and then if needs be, extend it when he's turns 18. So there's that. We've got experience at Spurs of contract disputes, meaning that players aren't getting games, aren't allowed to go out on loan until they sign the thing. And that concerns me. So these last two games would have been perfect opportunities to have Troy Parrott on the bench,
yeah,
or perhaps even starting against Middlesbrough. And the fact that he wasn't there, it does worry me a little. So there's two elements to that. Firstly, I think he's good enough to be on the bench and he could make a difference and he'll be genuinely a really handy option. There's also the fact that in not putting him on the bench, that sends a negative sign to him. And if we're already kind of locked in contract negotiations, is he really going to make him want to sign a contract if he's missed out on these bench opportunities? I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe he'll turn 18, sign a contract, start being involved, and everything will be fine. But I want to see some kind of plan for Parrott. It's fine if Mourinho thinks he's not ready for first team football and not ready for a loan. But in that case, he should be playing under 23 football, and he's not. Mm. So currently, he's playing no football. I mean, he'll probably play more games for Ireland than he will for Spurs at any level this season if things keep going this way. And that's not a good thing. We've been there before with other players. He needs games. And I hope those games are for us. But if they're not for us, I hope they're out on loan somewhere. It's an interesting one. I guess we'll know a lot more in a couple of weeks once he turns 18. And hopefully it's just a case of Parrott turns 18. And the day he does, he signs a five-year contract and all is one in the world. Let's talk more about youth players because we had another question from Jace Tucker, who says, what's going to happen to Skippy, also Walker-Peters and Foyt? We've spoken about Foyt already. Walker-Peters is being strongly linked with a move to Crystal Palace. That presumably will be a loan move. And Oliver Skip will be certainly down the pecking order with the signing of Jedson. What would you do with Skip, Bardi? Do you keep him around and hope that he gets a few minutes here and there, or do you send him out on loan to develop?
No, Skip's got to go out on loan. I really like him. I like the way he moves. I like his passing, his industry. I think he's got to go out on loan and get some minutes under his belt. Jedson has totally, he wasn't getting minutes anyway, but his route now to the first team is even further away. So Skip has to go somewhere and not fall for the whole kind of honour my Carl Walker-Peters trick.
Sure. And Nathan, what do you think about the Walker-Peters deal, whether that be a loan or a permanent transfer?
Yeah, I'm just happy for him to get some professional minutes away from the club. I think that's a good move for him, Palace.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens with Walker-Peters should he impress at Palace, whether that would mean that he's considered a Spurs player next year or whether we use that to sell him at a higher value. I guess it's too early to say at this point because he's still at the club at the moment, but yeah, we'll see. On a point, interestingly, on Onuma, he had a terrible start for Fulham. He was playing lots of games early on under Parker, took so much abuse from their fans online who were just saying, why have we signed this guy? He's absolutely useless. And then suddenly it all clicks. And the last few, he's been one of their best players. They absolutely love him now. They want that he's a mainstay in their midfield. And they're saying, you know, let's hope Onuma stays here for many years and develops at Fulham. I'm really pleased for him as well, because Onuma is a very good player. We just didn't see it at Spurs. I can completely appreciate, by the way, any people who just watched the Spurs first team who think Onuma's rubbish, because he didn't play particularly well in the Spurs first team, but he's a very good player. There's a good, talented English footballer in there. So, yeah, delighted to see him finally proving his ability in the Championship. Clement952 says, why are there so many good teenage fullbacks? Nathan, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I really like this question. So I sort of mentioned earlier the sort of fullbacks are centre-backs or wingers thing, which is a Jamie Carragher argument, which is that no one grows up wanting to be Gary Neville. All fullbacks are either a failed centre-back or a failed winger. And I think that's been true for a very long time. But I think that over the last 10 years, as we've seen most wingers stop being wingers and start being sort of inside players, creative players, or goal-scoring players more than before, fullbacks have become their own thing, not just wingers who lack in a certain area or whatever. So I think we're seeing players truly being brought through academies as fullbacks now, and that's why there's this generation, this young generation of rounded, good attacking fullbacks coming through.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. It's kind of an exciting position to play now with most systems, whereas before you were kind of just filling a hole. You were just there, making up the numbers. Now you're a prominent position.
Yeah, as a bad footballer, I've played quite a few minutes at fullback as sort of the last person to take a football role on the pitch.
I'm interested to see if the wrong-footed fullback becomes more of a thing over the next few years. I'm thinking particularly in respect to Brandon Williams at Man U, who's a right-footed player playing left-back and doing a really good job there. That's something, particularly on the left side, because obviously statistically more players are right-footed than left, so you've got more chance of making it, I suppose, if you're willing to play left back. So yeah, I'm intrigued to see if that becomes a thing as well.
Yeah, we did a... people can always scroll back and go to our Timeless Fullback episode where we talk about our favourite fullbacks. And I actually pick out Candela, who was one of the first kind of inverted fullbacks who used to cut inside on his right foot. He'd play from the left, cut inside on his right. It's a great effect. And I agree with what Nathan's saying, that there has been a change of mindset, especially in this country, on fullbacks. With a lot of that's got to do with the input of like Conte and Pochettino, Guardiola and Klopp, obviously, where they're just utilising the full width of the pitch. And to do that, you need good footballers in every kind of passing lane, and you need really good footballers wide. And fullbacks are no longer just a player you kind of pass it out to who just lumps it away. They're an essential part of attacking as well as defending now.
We had another question from Rob Kleinite, who is Orange Spur on Twitter. He says, for rebuild purposes, are Tottenham better off not being in the Europa League next season? Surely we don't need that bogging us down. Bardi, would there be any benefits to being in the Europa League?
I wouldn't mind being in it. I think it gives us gives you quite a good shot at getting back in the Champions League again. Man United have shown that. Arsenal and Chelsea last year, they showed how it kind of relatively easy it is. As long as you focus, you'll walk the group stages, and pretty much all the way to the quarterfinals, you'll be playing Farmers. So that is quite an easy route into the Champions League if the draw goes right. And I don't see a problem with it in a way to kind of blood through Tanganga, give Tanganga European experience and stuff. So I always think it's essential for Spurs to play European football. So if it is Europa League, it's Europa League.
And Nathan, has Mourinho got form for sort of heavy rotation in the Europa League?
Maybe in the groups. He likes to sort of, especially in his first season or first two seasons, pretends that Europa League is a huge major honour and win it, and then, you know, call himself a winner and all of that sort of stuff. I personally dislike watching Spurs play in the Europa League. But as Bardi said, the group stage especially is good for bringing through players. Harry Kane obviously broke through after playing Europa League group stage games. But that Thursday night football really just messes with your weekend, and I think it has a significant impact on league performance. And there isn't definitely an argument to be had that if you're not in the Champions League, you just shouldn't bother with midweek European football.
Not to mention tremendous opportunities for banter from other clubs.
Oh yeah,
which is just so tiresome. Finally, Dan Ford asked a question, which I'm gonna pass over to you, Nathan. He says, "I'd be interested in information on Tyler Adams. Spurs are taking on Leipzig, for whom Adams plays. He says he's just knocking the rust off a long injury absence that interrupted a great start start to life in the Bundesliga, but I've long thought him the more exciting American prospect over Pulisic. Nathan, you've seen quite a bit of Leipzig. What do you make of Tyler Adams?
Yeah, so here's my nuclear take. Not only is Adams the more exciting prospect, but I think that he is the US's greatest ever player already.
Holy shit.
Yeah. The history of US soccer is like not that brilliant, doesn't go back that long. So like, I think Pulisic was like at least in the running for that title beforehand, and I think that Adams has usurped him. He's a number six. He's creative from that position, but he's athletic as well. I guess he's sort of he's like if Winks was truly brilliant playing that kind of role. But because of that, he'll be really, really expensive. I think it'll be very hard to get Leipzig's hands off him. I see him eventually going to a trillionaire club kind of thing. And
by Munich, perhaps.
Munich or City or Barca or Real. I think that's where he's eventually headed. However, Dan mentioned his long injury absence. That is not his first long injury absence, and he's a young player still, so he's already a noted injury prone player. And so if we were going to be considering really spending big money on Adams, the consideration would be we're adding another injury prone player to our very injury prone midfield as it is.
Fair. It's interesting to get your thoughts on Leipzig. I know you've been watching them swatting up ahead of our Champions League tie, which is still a month away, but you're very nervous about that.
Oh, mate, they are going to kill us. They are so good. They are. Okay, so they play a very similar, not a very similar style, but a pretty similar style of football to Liverpool. And, look over our. I mean, I guess you can say, look how Mourinho set up against Liverpool. I thought he set up very smartly and say that there's some ideas and application there. But the sort of their general tactical approach and also their quality means that this is a really, really tough draw that we've got on our hands.
And Werner scored 20 goals already for them this season.
Remember when we were in for him about 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, that's depressing, isn't it? He would have been so perfect.
Quick, buddy, say something positive.
Every time I've seen him play, he's looked rubbish.
And that is as good a place to end you to end the podcast.
That's my scouting. He was all for the World Cup. Forget about him. Tang gang has got him.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and SoundCloud D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.